Hello everyone, my name's Rob and I'm an addict. This ain't easy for me at the best of times, and this is like a football match, you know. I was thinking, blimey, how many more are going to turn up, you know. But at the end of the day, I was sat here while Kerry was sharing, and I was thinking, you know, I've earned my seat in here, you know, I paid a dear price for it, you know. It was a journey in my using, you know. It was a journey of suffering, you know. And I didn't even know it. You know, I thought it was fun and games, but it wasn't. I just didn't know any better. You know, and there was many hard knocks along the way, you know, and I just thought that was the way life dealt its stuff to you, you know, and that's the way people in life dealt with you too, you know, and that's the way you dealt with them back, you know. They say all behaviour's learnt behaviour, you know. Well, I sort of grew up in breeding grounds for addicts and, you know, alcoholics, you know. I come from Irish parents, which were alcoholic, you know. Used to drink old English cider, and my old man would drink and fight with his pals and fight with my mum, you know, and I was a youngster watching all this, like watching giants fight and stuff, you know. Very paralysing with fear, you know. It's only on reflection that I can see that, you know. At the time, I think I was just stunned into fear, you know. Indoors, I was good as gold, but as soon as the front door opened, I'd turn into a little nightmare, you know. I'd act out on all that I felt and the confusion of it all, you know. I was raised a Catholic, and there was always a concept of God in my household and family, you know, and truth be told, you know, I kind of believed in God, you know. I always felt as though he was watching over me and my family and stuff. And I put a lot of stock and value in that. And but as my little life wore on, you know, I kind of became disheartened in that because, you know, I'd see my parents, you know, tearing their lives apart through alcoholism and stuff, you know, and I see me, my brothers and sisters, you know, just kind of sort of shell-shocked by it all, you know. My dad died when I was 10, you know, and I loved him dearly, you know. He was just suffering with this illness, you know, and but that done something really profound for me, you know. In that moment, you know, I was a confused kid anyway, but in that moment I kind of became infuriated, mostly with God, you know. And the resentment that I felt in my head and in my heart, you know, I believe that just seeped down into my soul, you know, it poisoned it, you know, and that was long before any drink or drugs come along for me, you know. This was as a 10-year-old, you know. I remember going to my dad's funeral as a 10-year-old, and all my uncles, brothers and all that stuff, you know, rub you on the head and say, don't worry, Rob, it'll be all right. Well, for me, it was far from all right, you know. Inside, I'd imploded and I didn't even know it, you know. I just, feelings was a no-no, you know. I'd avoid them at all costs. The path was set for me, you know. I grew up on a council estate in South London, you know, and the next door neighbours was just like me, you know. It was like a bit of a circus around there, really, you know. Schooling was a no-no. I was always a disruptive kid with a temper, you know, and I wouldn't be told nothing by no one, you know. I could be told by my mum or my older brother, you know, but anyone outside of that circle, it was a no-no, you know. I had a defiance about me that was, you're not entitled to tell me nothing, you know, you can't tell me nothing, you know. Anything you tell me has no consequence or bearing on how I feel, so F you, you know. And so I didn't do a lot of schooling. I was sort of loafing around the estates, hanging about with older kids, watching what they do, you know, monkey see, monkey do, and all that, you know. And I remember they used to talk about being in prison and that, and I used to think that was really big and clever, you know. I used to ask in choir what it was like and this, that, and the other, you know. The innocence of a kid, really, you know, and that's what he was aspiring to be, even as a youngster, you know. I climbed the ladder of drugs, you know, I went through the procedure of, you know, Tippex, thinner gas, and I climbed the ladder very rapidly to class A heroin injecting, you know, and it was, on reflection, because I never knew it at the time, you know, I was on a path of destruction, you know, I never knew it. And I welcomed it in my own kind of little addict mind, you know, I welcomed it, you know, because life wasn't fair and it hadn't treated me fair, so why should that change? And, you know, so I was sort of fighting back against life, you know. My outlook on life and the people in it was damaged, you know. It was resentful, it was angry, you know. It was a bomb site, you know, because I couldn't deal with it emotionally. And the drugs, they just allowed to take the edge off, you know. And, you know, great servant, terrible master, you know, as this illness progresses, you know. In amongst all that, you know, I was getting up to no good, young offenders and this, that and the other, and it was all fun and games, you know. There was no kind of, like I say, whatever they'd done to me had no bearing on how I felt, you know. I was kind of crushed inside, or whatever was going on for me inside, mostly a lot of hurt now that I can see, you know. But whatever they'd done to me, you know, you couldn't touch the sides, you know, and bring it on, you know, still full of defiance and anger, you know. And I realised that I was quite scared too, you know, but I could never have owned that at the time. I thought, what are you on about, you know. From an early age, I started losing friends, you know. When I was 17, you know, I was injecting heroin, and a good friend who I grew up with, you know, he had overdosed, and, you know, our families was close and stuff, you know. And, you know, he was a good geezer, you know, he used to go to church on Sunday, you know, he had a respectable family, and yet he was shot away and a proper toe rag kind of thing, and he had gone, and, you know, and I become more resentful that he had gone and not me, you know, I was the one who deserved it of it, or so I thought, you know. And life just progressed that way, you know. What I realised today is that, you know, until I found recovery, I had never tried to put anything into my life that would reap anything rewarding for me, you know. I had never kind of tried to build something good or put anything back or put stock or value in anything or anybody, you know. I took a girl hostage, if you like, and we had a baby, you know, and truth be told, I think I loved her, you know. But my addiction was progressing, and, you know, it got worse and worse as it does, you know, and she started to get the zig of it, as they do, and, you know, and in that time, you know, she was my last thread to sanity, really. She was my last bit of normality, you know. I'd done all the prisons and all that, but it was no, like I say, it was no hardship. But when she let go of me, you know, I'd been so used to avoiding any kind of feelings, and these feelings was like getting a shotgun blast in the chest, you know, they numbed me and took me off my feet, you know, and they wouldn't go away for a very long time, the feelings, you know, regardless of the amount of drugs I put in me. And in that, I went on an even more destructive, you know, I had no reason to keep going, you know. I had a little girl who I love dearly, you know, and I truly do, and I still do. She's the apple in my eye, you know, she's 15 now, going on 32. But, you know, even having a little girl, you know, I like to believe that I've got a good heart, you know, and I'm quite a deep kind of fella anyway, you know, but back then I just couldn't allow that to surface. It was, you know, people talk about it being a malady and, you know, a spiritual kind. Well, for me, you know, it's when I'm using and I'm an addict and that I'm doing all the manoeuvres and pulling strokes the way I do that, that my spirit can't put up with that, you know. And that, you know, is what kills it, you know. And towards the end, you know, I did feel like a man without a soul, you know. And I don't say that lightly because that's my truth, you know. We've all worked to our own path, you know. And everybody's pain here is their own pain, you know. I know mine, you know. I lived it, you know. I had to sit with it to a degree, you know. And I had to experience it, you know. And that's how I felt. I felt soulless, you know. If I was a house, I would have no electric, no heating, no, nothing on the curtains. I was just empty, you know. And, you know, it was almost as though I had done a step three in reverse, you know. I'd almost said, you know, we'll bring it on, you know. I'd hand it over to my addiction to say, do as you will with me, you know. The only trouble is, you know, this illness will make you, it'll punish you first, man. It won't just kill you, it'll take everything, you know. This is my experience, I'm not talking for NA, this is my experience of it. It'll take everything from you, you know, not just materialistically, you know, that's nothing. You know, it took my dignity, my morality, you know, it demoralised me, you know. And that's the stuff that really went deep and bounced around and hurt. And that's the stuff that, you know, became harder living with me, you know. And that's the stuff where I kind of started digging my own grave and thought I was worthy of digging it, you know. Because I'd become, this is what I'd amounted to, I'd been amounted to become an addict, you know. And in that time, you know, of that demoralisation and seeking and, you know, becoming what I had become, you know, there was a part of me that wanted a way out. And, you know, I went for help, you know. I'd turn up at a detox centre and I'd tell them I'd be shot to bitch, you know, I'd be, you know, 8 stone in a right 2 and 8. And, you know, I beg and plead with them to let me in, you know. And I tell them how hard I'd had it and, you know, how bad it was for me. And so I'd get admitted, as you do, and, you know, that night I'd be shimmying down the drawing park and shooting out to score or buy a drink, you know, and bring it back in. And, you know, the ambivalence of it, I just didn't have a clue what I was doing, you know. On one hand, I knew I wanted to stop, but it was like, to stop would kind of leave me, like, emotionally naked, you know. It was just seemed unbearable, you know, because I didn't know how to do it. And I got to a point where I really wanted to stop through consequences, heartache, suffering, and the list goes on. But I'd really wanted to stop, but to look forward was probably more frightening than carrying on, you know, to be able to apply myself into life and crack on with it. It was out of reach for me, so it was a rock and a hard place, and I chose the hard place, you know, and stayed there, you know, for a very long time, you know, and paid the price for that. But, you know, knowing what I know today, in paying that price, you know, because they say you got to hit bottom before you can come back up again, you know. And I believe that, you know, I hit it and bounced around there for a little while, you know. And I ended up going to prison again. You know, prison for me was no hardship, you know. For me, it became a sanctuary, and that's quite a sad thing to say when I think about it now, you know. Because when they released me from prison and I start using again, my mum lives on Brixton Hill, and I used to walk past Brixton Prison, and I used to wish that I was back in there. Not because I like prison, I hate prison big time, but I liked what I had in there. I could sit down, I could read a book, you know, I could go to sleep, I could wake up, you know, release me, and all that was gone, you know. I was on that hamster wheel of addiction, you know, and there was no stopping me until I was stopped by forces greater than me, you know. Anyway, I got a sentence, and it was a godsend, you know. By the way, you know, being in prison, like I say, I'm sure I'd become borderline institutionalised, you know. It was nothing to me. I remember going, I was on trial, and I remember downstairs in the court, and I prayed. I said, if you're going to let me out just to go back and do what I'm doing, then, you know, don't allow that to happen, you know. But, you know, if I meant to stay in here, because I'm knackered, you know. And I didn't just say that from my mind, you know. I said that prayer from my heart, you know. And I went upstairs and got guilty and got weighed off, you know. And I was relieved, you know. And that's quite another sad thing to say, you know, because it's where I was at. I'd been boxed in by my addiction. There was nowhere else to go, you know. It had mullered me, you know, top to bottom, left to right, you know. And it had took everything, you know. I had my dear old mum hanging on, you know. Before that, I'd have her running up and down to the Knicks and all that, sending money, all that caper, you know, which I'm ashamed to say, you know. Anyway, I was away for a couple of years, you know. Parole was looming, so I went and went on this rap thing, 12-step. For me, it was a carrot, you know, to get a bit of jam, you know. But anyway, I give it a go, and it introduced me to the 12 steps of NA, and I'm very grateful for that, you know. What I realised today is that this program started to work for me before I started to work for it, you know. It started to give me stuff before I even really knew I had it, you know. It started to reinstill in me some morals, some degree of balance, you know. It taught me about step one, you know, my powerlessness, my harms to others, you know, the broken promises, you know, and I had reams of them, reams and reams and reams, you know. I remember writing letters to my missus, crying into my letter, telling her I'm not going to do it anymore, you know. And I meant it, you know, I meant it like my life depended on it, you know. But you let me go and I was gone again. I'm sorry if I'm sounding proper miserable here, but, you know, this is my story, you know. But on a lighter note, you know, it did start to pick up, thank God, you know. Anyone need a one-to-one afterwards, come on. You know, it did start to pick up for me, you know. I started to, because that was the thing, you know. I was never an unintelligent fella. I was quite clever, you know, except where addiction was concerned. I used to see people get up and go and get jobs and work and have girlfriends, have cars and that. And this is a bit judgmental, but I think that geezer's the right donut, and yet I'm the one in jail and all this, that and the other, you know. And they get on with their life, how'd they do it, you know. So I just couldn't screw my loaf like that. And anyway, so I started doing this stuff, and I started waking up, you know. Pennies started dropping from heaven all over the place, you know. I did get parole, and I went to the South Coast, a lovely part of the world, and I love it dearly, Bournemouth. And, you know, the work had just begun then. You know, I had a lot of core pain that I had to open up and unpack and look at, you know, and I needed treatment, you know. I was so damaged, you know, antisocial, I couldn't look at you or talk to you, you know. It was, I was just so withdrawn within myself. My counsellor used to say that I used to live within a cave within myself, you know. The real me was frightened to come out and, you know, bask in this stuff, you know. And some days I still want to retreat in there, like before I started this year. But, you know, mostly now I can come out and, you know, taste what recovery is about. I left treatment and I got a sponsor and he took me through the work, you know. And I'm not one of these people that can recite how the steps work, but I know what they've done for me internally, you know, emotionally, you know. And I don't say this lightly either, you know. My feelings went from black and white to colour, you know. I had hope, you know, that I didn't have to return to what I was, you know. And that alone for me was a spiritual awakening, you know. Hope was my spiritual awakening. I see other people like myself doing it, you know. And I thought, blimey, I just got to jump into this slipstream and it will take me along, you know. get involved in this stuff and get involved in the power. You know, I passed 5 years in February, you know. And I don't say that as an egotistical thing. I say that because in that 5 years there's been quite a few just for days, you know, because it is a daily program, you know. Life doesn't kind of dismantle itself and start working around us just because we're in recovery, you know. It stays exactly the same. Just before Christmas, I was involved in quite a major car accident and got pretty badly smashed up. And you know, and before that, I was quite grounded within myself, grounded within my recovery, and kind of knew what I was. I was working, I was training, doing bits and bobs, you know. And that kind of just volleyed me right out of the ballpark, you know. I woke up in intensive care, busted up 4 weeks later, you know, and full of meds, you know, class A's. My life kind of shattered a bit. Well, not a bit, it was shattered, you know. I'd had my daughter in the car with me, I'd had my girlfriend in the car with me. They was damaged too, you know, and, you know, on reflection, I think I was mostly hurt, you know, and I was angry again, you know, and my mind was foggy, you know, and I went through a stage, you know, of knowing what I was, knowing that I was an addict, and life had thrown this at me, you know, and I was kind of looking at God again and thinking, what's all that about, you know, what's that in aid of, you know, and I still don't know, you know. However, you know, the transformation that is coming out of that, because it's a process, you know, now that I'm getting better physically, you know, emotionally, things are starting to seep through a little bit more, you know. I feel what it's took some more layers off it, the onion stuff, you know. But what I will say is that, you know, in being in hospital and being on them drugs, you know, you know, like a cuckoo, it moves into a nest and it don't even know it lays an egg. But that's what the addict done to me. I knew about addiction, but the addict had moved in and I hadn't even known it, you know. He was in my thinking, you know, he was parallel with my thinking. Every positive thought, there'd be a negative one parallel alongside it, you know. And I was fortunate and lucky enough to, you know, have a bit in the bank and have some very good friends around me who I could be honest with and confess my thinking and my feelings, you know. Because for a while, you know, I was in no man's land and, you know, I could have went either way because, you know, I could have run a bar for self-pity and jumped in there, you know, and wallowed there, you know. But, you know, what this stuff had given me, I wanted back, you know. I wanted, because I'm quite happy-go-lucky, I like a giggle, you know, and quite chirpy, really, you know. And I wanted that back, you know. This is what recovery had given me, the friends in recovery, that's what this had given me, you know. And, you know, slowly, slowly, I worked my way out of that, you know. Stopped the meds, which was kind of topsy-turvy, you know. It's almost like I had to bed in again, you know, bed in again for myself and my recovery, the person I was before, you know, because it had all been, you know, it was like a puzzle got busted up and I had to start slowly putting it all back together. I'm a very fortunate man, you know. I should have been died, you know. I should have died loads of times, you know. And this time in recovery, you know, I died twice on the roadside, you know. And I got to see the hand of God in this stuff, you know, because they didn't expect me to walk again. They expected me to have brain damage, and here I am. I'm still ticking over, you know. You can't get rid of me that easy. Some people, anyway, you know. There's work left to still do, you know, because this is going to sound a little dramatic, you know, this is not me doing this stuff, you know, this is me doing this for a power, you know, that I've managed to tap into, an inner resource that I never knew I had, you know, and you know, I have to keep that pilot light alight, you know. And it's like a little fire, you know. And if I don't feed that fire, then it will go out, you know. And in doing service, I go out and forage and feed that fire within me, you know. And it rewards me because it makes me feel alive and warm inside, you know. You know, I feel recovery, you know. Not all the time, don't get me wrong, I'm not cocky with this stuff, you know. But sometimes when I feel recovery, it comes through me, you know, and I know that I'm on the path, you know. And I know that I have a power in my life, you know. I have terrific friends who I love dearly, you know. I would give them half my heart, you know. That's just my makeup today, whereas before, you know, I rob your eyes and come back for your eyebrows, you know, and feel no way about it. How are we getting on?
10 minutes.
Blimey. Well, let me try and cheer this gaff up. Because on another note, you know, drinking drugs, you know, I believe for today I have a handle on them, and I have some serenity around them today. They don't enter my airspace where I'm kind of obsessing around them or, you know, wanting them, you know. And I've been through some stuff, as you just heard. I've been in relationships, split ups. I split up with the girlfriend from the crash, you know, and I had to kind of rely on me again, you know, rely on my higher power again. And so that stuff is kind of all right, you know. I'm going through the work again with another sponsor, you know. And what I've realised today is it's like, you know, these defects, you know, that I have, you know, it's like an air bubble in the carpet. You push it down and it'll pop up there, you know, and like I'm doing a twister kind of thing, you know, I'm all over the show with it, you know, because in some areas I'm very clean and serene and some I ain't, you know. It's a process, you know, and but I'm prepared to look at it, you know. Awareness is after battle, you know, because I was never aware. Today I am, and that's very fortunate, you know. And this awareness wasn't, you know, manifested within me, you know. It was manifested through yous lot, you know. God speaks to me through my friends and people in the rooms, you know. I never knew I could have this, you know. Because I never knew how to live life, you know. My life never got off the ground. I never had ambition, you know. And they say that addiction is the great remover and recovery is the great restorer. Well, for me, I've got a double whammy there because, you know, it has given me a life. It hasn't put my life back. It's given me a life, you know. And, you know, I taste the juices of that most times, you know. It's lovely. And I wouldn't want to give it up, you know. And, you know, this is why I do this stuff, and I do this stuff back at my own town, you know. I've got some, I know people that don't and choose not to, you know. They say they're too busy and they got work to do and this, that and the other, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, we've all only got like 24 hours a day, you know. And if an hour and a half of my 24 hours I have to do this stuff, then it's a very small sacrifice, you know. I heard someone say the other day, you know, your past can become your future. Well, I don't fancy that, trust me. You know, I don't want my past to become my future. You know, you know, I don't need to die to experience a heaven or a hell. And this is going to sound a little dramatic too, because I've experienced them both here. You know, this is where you get that stuff, you know. You can choose to live in a hell of your own making, or you can choose to having a little slice of heaven in your own little way, you know. And I try to apply that to the best of my ability, you know. I've heard it said that there's only two true emotions, you know. One is fear and one is love. You know, the rest are born out of them places. I just know that when I try to work my program, I start moving towards the love. And when I kind of rest on my laurels, I start moving towards the fear. you know, and it is all about balance in everything we do, you know. But I'm fortunate in that I want this stuff, you know. I don't just want it in my mind, because my mind's a bit mullered, you know. I want it in my art, you know. In my art, I don't want to go back, you know. I found the prize, you know, that I never thought was available to me, and I found it, and I nurture it and tend it, you know, to the best of my ability, you know. And when I can't do that, I ask for help around it, you know, and I get that, you know. I do my best to help others, you know. It's a big reward in helping others, you know. To be honest with you, in my early days, that's where I got my self-esteem from, you know. In helping others, it gave me a sense of self, you know. And my sense of self is still growing, you know. And today, you know, my sense of self is quite happy with who I am, you know. My sense of self is becoming emotionally more stable. Still hypersensitive, but emotionally more stable, you know. And I love that, you know, because that for me was foreign, you know. I'm really drying up here. I feel like I'm scraping the barrel a bit, but, you know. What can I say? You know, what I will say, and this is very important for me too, you know, me coming into recovery, the ripples that, and the warmth that I sent out through my family, you know, my dear old mum, God bless her, you know, I give her a nervous breakdown, you know, and she did have a nervous breakdown because of me, you know. And I remember going up to the hospital when she was in there being, you know, sectioned almost, you know, and I'm banging on the door to the doctors, let me see my mum. They're saying, it's for you, because of you, can't you see it? And I couldn't. But today, you know, I love my mum with all my heart, you know. She's the only worth person in this world bar my daughter that I would sacrifice my own life for, you know, and my recovery for. And today, you know, I'm able to love her and show that I love her. You know, I do that in my actions, not in my words, you know. I'm in the middle of getting her in an headlock and bringing her to Bournemouth. Because it's just, you know, up here she carries the world of her shoulder on her shoulders still. Because my brothers and sisters are active addicts, alcoholics, and all that entails, you know. And my mum has been through the wars too, you know, and she almost deserves a bit of sobriety, so, you know, and peace, you know, and hopefully I'm going to try and, in my amends to her, give her a piece of that, you know, and put some of my stuff right, you know. Thanks very much for listening to me. I hope I haven't depressed you too much and stuff, you know. I get a bit soppy sometimes, but there you go, you know, it's me. But, you know, on the flip of that, you know, I am a happy fella, you know, there are people who testify to that. Not many, but, you know. And I love my life, you know, and I could never say that before, you know, I do love my life. I've got to pack it in, I'm sorry, I've got nothing else.
You're fine, Rob, you're fine.
Thank you, everyone.